No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast. This is show number 188, and we're getting ready to start talking about the draft. So I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site for the USA Today NFL Wire. My co-host, Seth Cox, is from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. Seth, this is right up your wheelhouse. So this is where, well, especially as we get deeper into this show, I'll definitely be leaning more on you since it is draft time. But what can we expect on tonight's show?
Tonight, it's always, and it always starts, and honestly, this year more than any other, it starts with the quarterbacks for the Arizona Cardinals. And so we're going to go through the quarterbacks. We're going to talk about not just the top four, five, or six. We're going to go a little deeper. We're going to hit on seven or eight. The Cardinals allegedly like seven quarterbacks in this draft class. We know four are probably going in the top 10. We know another two are probably going in the first round. And then after that, there's a couple names that intrigue you and I, but the question is at what cost? And so we're going to cover those quarterbacks, how they work out in this offense that, let's be honest, we don't really know a ton about right now. And then are there any others to know out there? Like if the Cardinals get sniped again and don't get their guy in round one, two, or three, are there any guys on day three? I think there are. We'll discuss those guys and a little bit more. But it's going to be quarterbacks right now and you know, the upside, the downside. And we're going to start with the big four.
Yep. We basically break down this show into about four sections. There's the big four. There's the next two. You've got the big four we're going to talk about. You've got another two who may be first round. We've got one other one that might sneak into the first. Maybe we'll talk about if that's a possibility. And then the other ones that come on day three. But you and I are both in agreement that, well, at least for me, the Cardinals are failing the draft this year if they do not get a quarterback in round one or round two, based on the scenario that they have and with Sam Bradford as their starter, and based on the quarterback class that they have, just the sheer volume of quarterbacks who are viewed as who could be NFL starters at some level. They could be some level of NFL starter in the league. You've got as many as people like, as many as, you know, the team likes seven different ones. If you don't come away with a quarterback in the first or second round, you, no matter what you do the rest of the draft, you really have kind of failed the draft, in my opinion, because then you're almost having to say, and like Steve Wilks said today at the NFL owners meetings, you know, Sam Bradford's our guy and hopefully is for the future. Don't say stuff like that. I mean, yes, go ahead and say stuff like that, but don't mean it. Don't mean it.
Yeah, and it just goes back to what we've been struggling with the last, we'll just call it 2 years to be fair. The last 2 years of the Cardinals haven't made that leap. They haven't taken that jump. And you and I have talked about this a little bit, but we're going to give Steve Keim the benefit of the doubt, right? We're going to give Steve Keim the benefit of, I was trying to put the best players that were going to play and make an impact on the roster for Bruce Arians in his last, what we knew was kind of the twilight. We didn't necessarily know at this time last year that was Arians last year, but we knew it was towards the end, right? We knew it was right. Whether it was 1 year, 2 years, maybe three, if everything really worked out, we knew it was coming to an end. And so you and I are saying, okay, let's give Keim the benefit of the doubt that he was doing that for a guy he's called his older brother at this point. I mean, a guy that he really respected, and he wanted to try to get a player in there to win now and win in 2016 and 2017. All right, we're going to give him the benefit of the doubt on that. Let's hang on and see what happens from here. And so if they come away with, like you said, nobody, and I would even say round three, if they escape with, you know, a guy in round three that fell a little bit and they made a move for, okay, we can accept that. But if they come out of this draft with the sixth round rookie, there's going to be some questions, right? There's going to be some, okay, especially if guys are available, not if they miss on everybody, but if guys are available and they just don't pull the trigger, the question is going to be, start to become, are they afraid? Like, what are they afraid of? And because you can't keep going back to the, well, we got the guy we wanted. Well, every time, right?
sure. They wanted Hassan Reddick, but they only wanted him because they lost out on Mahomes and Watson. Let's be honest. They thought they were getting one of those two. When it didn't happen, they were happy to pick Reddick, but that's not who they really wanted.
Oh, and that's the thing. And, you know, Reddick is getting in a great situation now with Steve Wilks and Al Holcomb. So maybe it works out even – I mean, it obviously didn't work out the way we wanted it to in 2017, but maybe it works out even better for Keim, Steve Wilks, and Al Holcomb moving forward. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But it's definitely an intriguing draft class. And when you hear seven quarterbacks, you really feel – and you have – four picks in the top 100, man, you feel really good about those odds, right?
Yeah, you think so. So, but let's talk about the big four. The big four, if you haven't been following at all the NFL draft, the big four are USC's Sam Darnold, UCLA's Josh Rosen, Wyoming's Josh Allen, and Oklahoma's Baker Mayfield. We're going to call those the big four. Those are the ones that most people, like around the NFL, they see as the people see as your certain to be NFL starters and could be stars, like your franchise guys. And the guys after them are, we'll wait and see. So let's talk about each one, their upside, their downside, and how the Cardinals might be able to acquire them. Who do you want to start with?
Let's just start at the top. I mean, we can use kind of a consensus idea draft board. And so we'll start with Darnold because he seems – at this juncture to be destined to be the first pick in the draft, right?
It appears that way. And we're getting close enough to the point where we know, just like about a year ago or 2 years ago, we knew that the Rams liked Goff more than Wentz. They weren't saying it, but that's, everything was leaning that way. When Tampa Bay had Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, you kind of knew that Jameis was going to be the guy. It's about this time you always get that. Now, interesting about Darnold is he happens to be the least experienced, isn't he, of the group, right? He's got really 2 years of starting.
Right. You can label him or you know, the guy we'll call number two in a second, one of those two guys in terms of pure NCAA football college starts. They're definitely the two least experienced guys, but and in the same way, they both played better in 2016 than 2017. Darnold took a step back in terms of productivity, in terms of protecting the ball, playmaking, all of those things. He became kind of a turnover machine, and he has a lot of the the standard boxes checked. That's the term I'm looking for. The requirements checked, size, arm strength, those type of things. And he's got a little, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, Blake Bortles in him, where he kind of thrives in chaos more so than in structure. And you could see that in his time at USC, especially in a lot of big games where he was able to make throws and do some things on the field that, you know, a guy his size normally doesn't do. I know that he's been working really hard on fixing his motion, which has been a huge concern for a lot of people coming out. He's working with Jordan Palmer, I believe, Carson Palmer's little brother. And so, you know, he's a guy that when you look at pedigree, when you look at kind of just that quarterback ideal, he's a guy that checks all the boxes. And for the NFL, that's something that they're comfortable with. It's something that they are that they don't have to make up as big of a projection on. So when you put a guy into a spectrum of, you know, is he, you know, he's going to be on the Blake Bortles to maybe Ben Roethlisberger spectrum, that's a really good spectrum. And people might say, well, Blake Bortles stinks. Well, Blake Bortles just was the quarterback on the, you know, runner up for the AFC championship that.
And three seasons ago, he was super, super productive. People forget that 2016 yeah. was not good. 2015 was really pretty fantastic. And 2017, he was held back and because he didn't have to produce it, but they won games. It was, that's really kind of nice. Now, both of us, at least for half these guys, but you know, between Darnold and Rosen, living here on the West Coast, being Pac-12 guys, I have season tickets to ASU. So I go to every ASU home game. I've seen Sam Darnold play. There are things, you know, you see both ends. You see the, wow, that's, he's got some special traits to him. But then there's times when he's very underwhelming and you question his decision-making, which leaves you kind of the Blake Bortles type thing. But you see the potential upside. He's a starting quarterback at a major, major program. Now, in terms of, you know, you do more of the draft analysis and evaluation, but what I see, he's not a sure thing quarterback at the top. He's not Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck, you watched him at Stanford, you know, wow, he's going to be a star. You see Sam Darnold and you're like, he's got a lot of upside. And then part of that's because he only has 2 years of starting and he's coming out of the draft with just 2 years of really of 2 years of college gameplay. And you've seen some highs, you've seen some lows. Obviously the downside would be the turnovers that he has. But that's a good spectrum. Like you get a Blake Bortles, you can win with him. You might not win championships. You get Ben Roethlisberger. Yeah. You're contending yearly.
Right. And so in the NFL, it's all about risk management, right? It's all about finding a way to put your team in a position to win championships and not lose. And again, when you look at Bortles, you may say, well, he's been on some really bad Jacksonville teams. Right, but he's not Ben Roethlisberger. He's not an elevator of talent. He's a guy that has to be elevated by those around him. And you saw when you put a really strong team, and let's be honest, the Jaguars offense wasn't great in 2017 in terms of talent. They were injured, you know, completely at the wide receiver position. They were reliant on a rookie running back and a good, if you know, good, not yet great offensive line. And a quarterback that could make timely throws and big plays running and throwing the football. And so when you look at it from that perspective, I think you can be comfortable and confident with that in Sam Darnold. But that is why there's some hesitation of him being the first pick. And number two, Josh Allen is getting some of that, maybe he slides into that number one pick. Maybe the Browns take the guy that has uncanny upside, but where you're talking about his spectrum is more, you know, John Skelton to Brett Favre, right? So when you look at it from that perspective, are you, you know, and maybe it's not even as bad as John Skelton, but maybe you're looking at more like Jeff George to Brett Favre, right? So you're saying, look, you're going to get a 12, 14 year, 16 year quarterback that's going to start you some games. It's really going to be a better backup and veteran, you know, kind of journeyman, or you're going to get a Hall of Famer. Right. And so, and so that's the risk management that NFL teams have to do, because when you look at it from that perspective, would you rather take a guy that has a higher floor and a potentially lower ceiling, or would you rather take a guy that has a much lower floor, but you're talking about, you know, you're talking about a guy that could end up, like I said, on that Brett Favre, John Elway kind of spectrum, if everything goes right. I don't see that for Josh Allen, but if everything went right, that's, you know, those are his like high end comps to be in. So that makes people comfortable. And
Josh Allen, the thing with him, he's got special arm talent. You look at the numbers and what he did in college, and it's underwhelming, but the buzz that he's getting is really reminiscent of Carson Wentz. Only there are some very different. You have to look at their careers differently, but it's the same type of thing. He killed it at the combine. The knock on him has been inaccuracy. He's another guy that's working with Jordan Palmer, and Jordan Palmer, now granted, it's self-serving, but he says he's never seen anyone else like him with his athleticism, with his arm strength, because he's got Matthew Stafford like arm talent. And that's kind of what you kind of hope he can be, because if you look in the history of the people, if you look at the history of inaccurate quarterbacks, Matthew Stafford's really kind of the only one that kind of turned it around. But Jordan Palmer says it was a simple thing of his arm, his stride. You cut down the stride. He's accurate. He's going to be throwing to receivers that know what they're doing. He has the right mental makeup. Anecdotally, he says you want a guy who knows how to solve things. And he said, Palmer says that Allen's a son of a farmer, oldest in the family, and you know how farmers go. And when something breaks and dad's got work to do, he tells the oldest kid, hey, go fix it. He's got that sort of makeup, according to Palmer. So Sam Darnold, he sees not just parallels, but he sees a lot of similarities in Carson, in the way, in their makeup, in their competitive fire, in the way they handle themselves, the internal processors. And Josh Allen, he says he's never seen anyone like him. And so you get someone who's kind of, you've got the small school scenario, so you're getting a lot of comparisons to Carson Wentz, but you didn't have the production, you didn't have the success, the winning, which is a big concern. But the draft analysts are in love with him.
So you're not going to find me as a guy that's going to tout much of Josh Allen. Like, If he falls to 15 and the Cardinals make a move for it, or, you know, pick him, I'm not going to begrudge that. But he's not a guy that I would feel comfortable going all in for. I did feel that way about Carson Wentz, which I guess was right. And I was, I guess, wrong about Jared Goff, because I thought them going all in for Jared Goff was asinine. So, you know, sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. But what I will say about Allen is this: when you look at Wyoming football, and that's a very underwhelming thing. When you look at Wyoming football as a starter, he won 16 games. Okay. The previous, I guess sure I have my years right. The previous 5 seasons before him, they won 15 games combined. So again,
there is some success then.
When you look at it from that perspective, when you look at it from the perspective of within his circumstances, so from 2012 until 2015, so sorry, 4 seasons, they won 15 games combined. When you look at it from that, he did a really nice job. He elevated the program in the program sense. Now, we're not talking about, you know, high-end bowl games or any, you know, great games against big schools. In fact,
one of the things you pointed out with Carson Wentz a couple of years ago that people were talking about his winning program, well, one of the things that you had to worry about him was the fact that the success after Wentz left continued. It didn't matter who was playing quarterback. They played well and they won games.
Right. And so that's what it comes down to is for the Browns. And so, you know, I'll pull back the curtain a little bit. I'll tell you what I've heard from different people, and you know, and let Jess react. So I haven't even talked to Jess about this yet, but so here's what I've heard is that the Browns are leaning Darnold. They're leaning Darnold, and allegedly that's who the Giants want. So that is why the Giants are continuing to hang on to that second pick, just in case the Browns do the Browns thing, right, and take Josh Allen. So if you're the Giants, you can't afford right now to trade away the second round or the second overall pick until the Browns officially, whether it be before the draft and just sign Sam Darnold, or on draft night pick him and then you start working the phones. But you can't really do anything until that's official, right? Because you can't, if you have a chance at Darnold and you feel like he's your guy, then you have to, you know, stay there. So so we'll see what happens, but right now it looks like Darnold's going to go number one. And so from a Cardinals perspective, that presents the question of, is Josh Allen or the next two guys we talk about worth going up to number two for? And so the third guy, and again, I think all four of these guys can be jumbled up. I think right now most people you see are going to have them in this order. And so Darnold one, Allen two, and Rosen three, Josh Rosen number three. So, you know, you talked about him a little bit. When you look at Josh Rosen, the first person that comes to mind for me as a comparison, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but it is Matt Ryan. Like that steady, consistent, cerebral quarterback that understands how to play quarterback and does it at a very high level. And he may not be a guy that you look at in, you know, 12 years and go, that's a first ballot Hall of Famer. But he's going to be a guy that you're like, man, do you remember how good Matt Ryan was? You know, you're going to go back and go, man, do you remember how good Josh Rosen was? I mean, those whoever he ends up on teams were always competing. They were always in it. And he took, the, you know, he elevated them. And that's who Rosen reminds me of as a player.
I like that. Actually, I really like that comparison. I was trying to think of a player that he would match up for. He seems to be, to me, of the quarterbacks at the top, he's the one that's going to be the most ready to, like, if he had to start in 2018, he'd be the most capable to do it. He's a guy that you need to give some time for. Like he said, he's not looking for read number one and number two. He wants read three and four. In fact, Josh Rosen probably would wow Bruce Arians. Not necessarily with his arm talent, but just the type of mentality that he has. He wants to pick apart a defense. He's not looking just to get rid of the ball as quickly as he can, which is what a lot of the NFL is. Let's be honest about that. Much of the NFL now looks more and more like college. Get the ball out quick, depending on the offensive system that they run. Josh Rosen, that might not be for him. He can do it, but he's looking to read and react and to get the ball down the field quickly. We do know that, you know, there are some concerns of durability. There's the talk of, I don't know what this is. I don't buy into this. Some people say, oh, he's an atheist, and so teams don't want him, or they're worried about him, or the fact that he's the golden boy who's always had everything. I don't buy so much into that. It seems that he seems to be, in terms of a personality, a little more Jay Cutler than he is Philip Rivers or Carson Palmer, but that, I don't know about that. But one thing I saw when he was on the field this year, I went to the game at UCLA when ASU was there. And that was a game that ASU most certainly should have won. And Rosen picked them apart. Now, ASU's defense was no good, but he made wow throws, which impressed me. So he's a guy that I love the Matt Ryan comp. And I think whoever gets him is going to, as long as he stays healthy, will be a very successful quarterback.
Yeah, and so when you look at that, when it's all said and done, again, it's about it's about mitigating risk, right? So you've got the kind of Northern California country boy in Josh Allen, right? Small town farm boy with the golden arm and work ethic. You've got the kind of groomed to be a star quarterback from USC, from California, you know, the very, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Lucrative area of California where, you know, he's been trained for this. This is where he's been working for his entire career as a quarterback. And then you have the enigma. You have the guy that, from a talent perspective, maybe he's better than the first two. Maybe he, like you said, maybe he understands the game better than the first two. Maybe he knows how to use his talents better than the first two. But yeah, he rubs people the wrong way. And you, people may scoff at that. They might, but you have to remember, again, the NFL is about mitigating risk. They're about making sure that if they invest in you. So let's say the New York Jets, right? So we say, let's just hypothesize and say Darnold goes one and Allen goes two. And so you're the New York Jets. You have to make sure that Josh Rosen is going to be dedicated enough to get to that Matt Ryan level of play. Because when you look at the NFL, the history of the NFL, it's littered with guys that had the mental and physical makeup on the field, but lacked the desire off the field, that lacked the desire to put all of that to use. And so when you put it in those circumstances, you start to say, okay, I kind of get why people are concerned. I won't say worried, but I would say concerned about Josh Rosen, the quarterback. But if you're the Arizona Cardinals and you're sitting at 15 and you've got Darnold and Allen going top, let's just call it top five, and then you've got number four, Baker Mayfield, that gets picked up in that 6 to 10 range, and then all of a sudden Josh Rosen peeks his head at you at 11 and says, hey, I'm still here, you know, and Miami passes. And then all of a sudden, you know, that 12 to 14, maybe the Bengals, maybe the Packers, right? But I can't see it. All of a sudden, that 12 to 14, now you're like, wow, the Cardinals could end up with Josh Rosen. And that's why, you know, I wrote about it the other day and you wrote about it the other day. That's why the Cardinals are meeting with Josh Rosen. Because if he's the guy on draft day that slides because of that quote unquote off the field personality issues, you want to be ready and say, can we have this guy as the leader in our locker room? Because I can tell you this much. If you just said, Seth, you get to pick one of the top four quarterbacks, one of these four guys at one, you got to pick, I would 100% take Josh Rosen. He's the guy I would want. But when you factor in other things, that's where people start to get worried. And that's why on draft day, Rosen could be the guy that kind of slides a little bit.
And then the fourth guy of the top four, where he ranks, well, it's not necessarily saying that's where we rank him, because the fourth guy to me, he for the longest time was my favorite. Now, I think I've kind of let him slip for me, but mainly because I don't think there's any chance the Cardinals will get him. That's Baker Mayfield, Heisman quarterback, Heisman Trophy winner, Oklahoma. He's the undersized one. He's just over 6 foot. People see a lot of Johnny Manziel with, which scares people. He, to me, he looks like, and he's not as athletic, which is a little disappointed me at the combine. He looks to me like a mix of Russell Wilson and Philip Rivers. He's got the Philip Rivers kind of personality. He's super fired up. He sometimes will get mad when he shows a little too much emotion sometimes. But his playmaking skills and the fact that the way he came up, he started as a walk-on. He's a three-year star. He worked his way up, and he won over the locker room. He puts up incredible numbers. I mean, you look at his last year at Oklahoma. He threw for 4,600 yards, 43 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. 2 straight seasons he threw for 40 touchdowns or more. And then in 2015, it was 36. He doesn't turn the ball over. He throws the ball really well. He can run, but that's not his main thing. I mean, he can move, but he's the most exciting of those four to me. And I see, in terms of personality, I see Russell Wilson, and I see the way that he took over that Seattle team, and I see that Mayfield could do the same thing, except his arm's not as good, and he's not as athletic, which scares me a little bit.
So the guy, I get dragged for this a lot, and I'm okay with it, but he's on this kind of spectrum to me of, I don't know if he can ever be Russell Wilson, because like you said, he's not that athletic, right? But if you put him on the spectrum of Colt McCoy being like his low end, so a long-term backup in the NFL, and his high end is Russell Wilson. Like, I don't – like we both said, like, he's not Russell Wilson, but let's just put that high end that spectrum up there. The guy he kind of reminds me of, and a guy that was a good quarterback for a number of years, is Jeff Garcia. You know, kind of that smaller – West Coast, can move, but isn't like super athletic, but can move a little bit, knows how to play the game with his size, knows how to create windows to throw in.
Fiery. So, that, like, Jeff Garcia is a great comp, because he was kind of the same way too.
And so when you look at it from those perspectives, and people will take that as a negative, like, oh, you're comparing him to a, you know, Jeff Garcia, but you know, not every quarterback, whether they're, you know,
Jeff Garcia first overall, won a lot of games and played a long time.
Yep, and he was a 4-time Pro Bowler. You know, that's what a lot of people forget. You know, he made 4 Pro Bowls, and he had some really good seasons in San Francisco. They won a lot of games with him in 2 seasons. He won 12 games 1 year and 10 games 1 year. You know, he was a guy that he had a really nice career. And the difference with Manziel is he's not going to be starting when he's 29, right? He's going to be starting when he's 23, 24, however old he is. And so you're getting 5 extra years of that kind of prime quarterback age. And you know, with the advancements of care and things like that, if you're talking about a guy that puts up, you know, peak Jeff Garcia numbers from 2000 to 2002, where he was a guy that was a 3-time Pro Bowler that completed, you know, 63% of his passes for just over 11,000 yards total, and threw for just under 70 touchdowns in 3 seasons and only 32 interceptions. Those are really, really good numbers. Those are really,
especially considering the era that it was, because it was pre-2003.
Right. And so you're talking about a guy that for 3 years was one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. And again, Garcia did that at age 30, 31, and 32. So you're getting Manziel 5 years earlier, in his kind of prime. And so if you get 8 to 9 years of that, man, that's a great pick. And that's the thing people struggle with. They expect if you take a quarterback at 1, that they're all going to be these high-end guys, right? They're all going to be Ben Roethlisberger or, you know, John Elway or Dan Marino or Brett Favre, whoever you want to compare Josh Allen to, or Matt Ryan. But there's the reason that I use player comp spectrums is because there are lower ends of those guys. You know, you talked about a little bit, like Josh Rosen may be more Jay Cutler than Matt Ryan, right? Because personality wise, and you know, Josh Allen may end up being more like Jeff George, and Sam Darnold may be closer to like a Blake Bortles than a Ben Roethlisberger. And so there's chances that these guys are still starters or quality NFL players, or even long-term, you know, 15-year backups in the NFL, just as much as there's a chance that they are these superstar all pros, potential Hall of Fame types. And so I think that's what people have to get their head around, because if you're talking about Baker Mayfield in the Jeff Garcia mold, we're talking prime Garcia, who was a Pro Bowl quarterback, and that's a really good thing for a team. It may not be, you know, Russell Wilson or Drew Brees, the comps that get thrown around on Baker Mayfield the most, but, you know, we're talking about two guys that are likely headed to the Hall of Fame and have won Super Bowls. That's a very rare and elite company. So
now the question is, for all four of these, how do the Cardinals get it? We think pretty much for all of them, if they're going to land any or all of them, they have to make a trade up, and probably top five, because it's very possible every single one of these guys is gone within the first five picks. That's a real possibility, which brings the cost to get up into the top five from number 15. It will cost them at least their first this year, their second, their third, not their compensatory, but their actual third, number 15 in the third round, plus a first and a second next year, which means you better get it right. I mean,
and that's probably to go up to four. If you're talking about maybe having to go all the way up to two, you'll probably have to even throw in that compensatory third round as well. I mean, you're talking a huge investment, and you're right. You have to get that right. I mean, that is, you know, if you get it right, you're the Rams. You're the Eagles, you know, maybe not a Super Bowl, but you're in the same area as the Rams. If you get it wrong, you are the Houston Texans right now without JJ Watt coming back healthy. Like you're the Houston Texans without the upside of Deshaun Watson. No, you're the Houston Texans who should have had the fourth pick in the draft. And oops, that actually belongs to the Cleveland Browns. That's the Houston Texans you are.
Now, in terms of who could fall, we both seem to agree it doesn't look like Sam Darnold there's any chance. The two quarterbacks, now actually some mock drafts that had the other three drop. Sam Darnold, I don't think I've seen fall at all. And Baker Mayfield, I've seen mock to the Cardinals. I've seen Josh Allen mock to the Cardinals. And once, was it Kuiper, was it? Or McShay that had Rosen falling?
Yeah, I think it was McShay. And
You look at those. I can see why Allen might, but there's too much of a high end to do that. Mayfield, maybe, because the height, that's a thing. That's really a thing in the NFL. So that's a possibility.
And there are now reports, and this always happens, and that's why you take everything with, you know, an ocean of salt at this point, right? Like, you can't take anything for, you know, as truth, but that's why – or you're hearing that he rubbed people the wrong way, right? At the combine, at the Senior Bowl. Now, I don't buy that at all. 100%, I do not buy that. Everybody I've talked to said that they'd be shocked if Mayfield is at five, that the Denver Broncos don't take him. And that would make sense. I mean, you just signed Case Keenum and you know, Mayfield's probably a souped up version of that. So that wouldn't be a huge transition for your offense. But yeah, I mean, I just don't see Mayfield. I don't see Allen either. Everybody I've spoken to have said that there's three teams that really like Josh Allen, and allegedly, the Buffalo Bills, the Denver Broncos, and your Arizona Cardinals. So, and then the Jets, there are those within the Jets organization that allegedly like Josh Allen. So, but allegedly the Bills and the Cardinals are both hot after Josh Allen. So I guess the question from me to you, would you be willing to give all that up to go to four if Josh Allen is there?
For me, that's tough. Considering the options that there are later that I kind of talked myself into, I would be hard pressed to do it for one reason. And that's because they have so many other holes that they need to fill that I think that they could adequately fill that quarterback spot with another one of the next three guys we're going to talk about, and I would be completely comfortable with them. Allen scares me. Allen scares me a lot, and especially for the price. And yeah, and it's – if they are convicted, I guess that it's worth it. If they think it's worth trading everything for it, guess what? It's probably going to work. They probably like that. Now, considering what we know about who the Cardinals have really liked, the Cardinals really like Deshaun Watson. That looks like smart scouting. They really like Patrick Mahomes. Also kind of looks like smart scouting. They loved Carson Wentz. Hey, that's working out. They also really love Blake Bortles, which is a little less steady, but based on what we know in the past.
And they've liked Mike Glennon. I mean,
there's that.
No, that's what I'm saying. So you run a range of those things. Like they like Glennon and Bortles, and you're like, okay, those are. I mean,
but they didn't love Glennon the way they love those other quarterbacks because they passed on him how many times. So that there's a different kind of like. So that they felt that those other guys were legitimate franchise quarterbacks. So you can feel a little bit comfortable because the Cardinals were kind of targeting loved those guys, and so you can know, okay, they were on the right track. So if they say Josh Allen's that guy, you should feel, as a Cardinals fan, some comfort in that then they're doing it right.
Yeah, and so that's my only – I hesitate with Allen, like I said, if you're moving up to four. Two, God forbid. One, Jess and I will literally have nothing to do the rest of all of Friday. If they trade their second and both thirds to move up to two. I mean, we're going to have plenty to write about, but we're not going to have to pay attention to the draft, which kind of stinks for us because, you know, that is one of the fringe benefits of the draft or, you know, running these websites is that Jess and I can be like, oh, hey, sweetie, we gotta watch the NFL draft for 6 hours because you never know, the Cardinals could make a deal. So they trade away all of their picks, and Jess and I are going to be in trouble with trying to sell our wives on letting us watch 6 hours of the NFL draft. But I mean, it's just one of those things. I don't know if you can talk me into it with any of these quarterbacks. This isn't just an Allen thing. I don't want people to think, oh, well, you're just anti-Allen. No, I really don't think you could talk me into it with any of the top four guys. And we're going to talk about why in a second, because you and I are on the same page with this. There's a second tier, quote unquote, of guys that we feel comfortable with at 15. And then there's a third tier of guys that you and I are comfortable with on day two.
Correct. And that's what we're going to talk about next on the Rise of C-Red on the next segment of the show. We're going to talk about that second and third tier. So basic late first to the second round. That's what we're talking about next on Rise of C-Red.
If you're like me, the wine section at the grocery store can be daunting. That's why I switched to wink.com. That's right. That's trywink.com. And you get great bottles of wine shipped to you for your palate. We did it in February and in March, and it was fantastic. We had 5 bottles of delicious and different wines shipped to us, and we were able to try them all out with our friends and family and kind of write down what we liked and didn't like and, you know, go from there and learn more. Wink, that's WINC, is the wine club for you if you're looking for a great way to learn about new wines available. Wink makes it easy to discover great wines. How? Wink's wine experts select wines matched to your taste, personalized for you, then shipped right to your door. And that's all starting at just $13 a bottle. Even if you don't know a thing about wine, just that you like to drink it, Wink makes it easy because they do all the work for you, matching wines to you based on your taste. Just fill out Wink's palate profile quiz, answer simple questions that your average store clerk wouldn't ask or translate into a recommendation. And then they'll send you the recommendations and you get to try the wine, which, let's be honest, is the best part. Each month, there are new delicious wines available to be sent to you. And the best part is there are no membership fees, and you can skip a month or cancel at any time with no fees. Shipping is covered, and best of all, if you don't like the bottle they send you, they'll replace it with a bottle you'll love, no questions asked. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/cred, and you'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink.com/cred for $20 off. trywink.com/SEERED.
We're back on Rise Up C-Red, and we've talked about the big four. I've consigned myself to feel those won't happen. And more, I'm kind of pounding the table with what would be a Steve Keim move. It's going to be one of a couple things that they're going to either, and I don't think they'll end up drafting a quarterback at 15. I don't think it could happen, but either trading back or picking someone at 15 they really like, and then moving up in the second or even at the end of the first. And this is where we'll talk about three quarterbacks, one being the very, very exciting Louisville quarterback, Seth's QB1 on the board, Lamar Jackson. We're going to talk about Oklahoma State's Mason Rudolph, and then a sleeper in some way in Richmond's Kyle LaLetta. Tell us about your man crush on Lamar Jackson. And he has the most exciting future, but he's also one of the scariest.
Well, and it's one of those things with Lamar Jackson. You're talking about a guy who is an electric talent. And I know this is not a name Cardinals fans want associated with their quarterback, but I've always said Lamar Jackson's game really reminds me of Colin Kaepernick. Like, you're talking about a big, strong, physical athlete who isn't just a guy that can run the football, but he's a guy you can run the football with because of his athleticism. Pro Football Focus had an amazing stat on Lamar Jackson about that his rush yards – it was something absurd, like only 23% of his rush yards came from actual scrambles.
That's crazy. Like
27%. So, yeah, but still, I mean, that's still crazy. You're talking about a guy that ran for almost 5,000 yards in his career.
And an important thing to note statistically, in college, sacks are negative rushing yards, and he rushed for over 1,500 in 2016, and he rushed for over 1,600 in 2016, and that is adjusted for sacks as negative rushing yards.
And so you're talking about a guy who is athletic enough to move from the pocket and use in the running game, but he's not the guy that he gets billed to be a one read and pull it down and run type of guy. No, in fact, if you go to Bolts from the Blue, the sister site of SB Nation, the Los Angeles Chargers. Let's call them the San Diego Chargers. The Los Angeles Chargers SB Nation site. Kyle Posey, a good friend of mine, Kyle Posey has a fantastic article breaking down Lamar Jackson, and that one of Lamar Jackson's strengths and one of his weaknesses is sometimes he forgets how well he runs the football. And so he will evade rushers and reset and try to throw the ball and make a play. And so when you're talking about the NFL and a guy that goes through reads, that comes from a pro style offense, I know it's spread out, but you know, Bobby Petrino actually runs a version of the West Coast offense. So it's a short, quick timing passing game, a passing game that has done very well in the NFL for a number of years. Now, all of that being said, anytime you're sub 60% as a passer, you are automatically a red flag, 100%. It's why I have a problem with Josh Allen, and I'm not a hypocrite. It's why if you're drafting Lamar Jackson, you're drafting a guy that you are aware of the warts. You know that the problem is that he trusts himself too much, and he tries to make too many plays with his arm, despite having, you know, an extraordinary ability running the ball. And so when you look at it from those things, that's why I have him as quarterback one.
Would you say he is and the name that's going to be very scary, but people forget Robert Griffin was absolutely dynamic for his first season. And were it not for those injuries, would you say that Lamar Jackson has a higher ceiling than Griffin's rookie year?
I think he does, because I think he's a more refined quarterback coming out. When you look at Griffin, he came out of a Baylor offense that is a more run and shoot spread in terms of style of play. And so it's a little different and a little more simplistic than the offense that Lamar Jackson ran at Louisville. And so when you look at all of that, and when you put it together, I think his ceiling is higher. I think he can make that same type of rookie year impact, but I think he can continue to grow. Like I said, I think this is a guy that can be a franchise quarterback, and that's why I wouldn't trade up from 15, because I think he's a guy that you can get, and he's a guy that you sit him for a year behind Sam Bradford, and in 2019 he takes over, and it adds just a whole new dimension and ability to your offense.
Yes, and the thing that I like now, he scares me as a prospect, because there is a big bust factor. So he might be the quarterback with the lowest floor, depending on how things happen. But the reason why the Cardinals could fit this is because Steve Wilks has said very clearly that he wants to run the football. They have an offensive coordinator, Mike McCoy, who is known for his flexibility and his ability to kind of tailor things to his personnel, particularly his quarterback. He's worked with a number of different quarterbacks, including Tim Tebow. And so you think of it this way: if the Cardinals want to run the ball, want to be able to run the ball, you don't even hit Lamar Jackson becomes an extra facet to that, an extra phase, an extra weapon, because he doesn't even have to scramble. You can design plays for him to run that have pass options. And could you imagine a running 1-2 punch of Lamar Jackson and David Johnson? That is something. And Mike McCoy would be the guy who you could see doing that. Here's what I could envision from him eventually. If you're old enough to remember Randall Cunningham was special. Too bad he didn't have more success in the postseason. And when he got older, he wasn't quite the runner. He was a very prolific passer with the Minnesota Vikings late in his career. You look at Michael Vick, special runner, developed as a passer. But you look at his 2010 season there with Philadelphia after his return. That was one of the best seasons we've ever seen from a quarterback overall when it came to passing and running production. And Lamar Jackson gives you that potential if he can grow into that. And speaking to the accuracy, the one thing that is very good trending-wise, each of his 3 years at Louisville improved. He went from 54.7 to 56.2 to 59.1. So, yes, there's the accuracy issues. However, there's improvement each year, which gives you a positive trend.
Right. And that's the big thing. And he's a guy that has done it. When you look at it, you know, I hear a lot of people say, well, Josh Allen has really bad talent around him. So does Lamar Jackson. I mean, look at the number of Louisville players that are going to be drafted this year. I think it's one on the offense.
The tackle might get him. Jaron Christian. Right. He might.
He was Louisville's offense. I mean, and when you
three when seasons you look, 69 right. touchdown passes and 50 rushing touchdowns,
right?
That's 119 touchdowns
and only 32 interceptions, I believe. And so, you know, he's not, yeah, exactly. So, oh, yeah, so even less. So, he's not a guy that turns the ball over, he's a guy that protects the ball. He's a guy I think that can be a special player at the next level. And that's why I struggle with the idea of trading up from 15.
Most now, people think at 15, it's probably a little too rich, that he would be better targeted. And the thing is, I don't think Jackson is one you're going to be able to trade up from the second round to the end of the first to get them. I think personally, people say the 20 to 40 range. I think he's going to be closer to 20. I would have to bet, because someone's going to bet on that talent. I wouldn't mind him at 15, but better would be to trade back, pick up an extra day two pick to fill other things, and still land Jackson.
And then there's another player, and I think Jackson, like I said, is quarterback one. If you ask me to rank him, it'd probably be Jackson, Mayfield, even though I feel like Rosen's better, Rosen, Darnold. And then in that QB5 situation, I would put Allen in this guy, and that's Mason Rudolph. And he's a guy that has started to get some love in this conversation of, and you and I have really driven this conversation. Would you take Mason Rudolph at 15? And it comes down to, again, it's not whether or not it's the right value. It's whether or not
you can get him later.
Exactly. And so if you learned the hard way with Mahomes and Watson, you thought, oh, those guys are going to fall to us. And then you were wrong. And now you're saying, okay, well, we can trade back, or okay, we can move back up into the first round. And it's like, do you want to risk that? Is that a risk you want to take? And so when you look at Mason Rudolph, there's some statistics that my buddy Justin Higdon has been doing for a while, and they're kind of unique quarterback stats that get overlooked. And so, you know, a lot of times, you know, you talked about a little bit with Lamar Jackson, you have the accuracy concerns. And so, you know, he was under 60% for his career. And so that's a concern. That's, you know, all of that. Well, when you look at these other stats, and these are the stats that I used in my article when I wrote about Lamar Jackson, was what do they do in key situations? What do they do when it's third down? Well, Jackson was the fourth ranked draft eligible quarterback on third downs. And you might think, well, there's only seven draft eligible quarterbacks. No, there's like 22. there's a ton.
There's a whole bunch not worth talking about though.
Right. And so Jackson was ranked fourth in those numbers. At 43.6% on third down conversion, but even better on third and seven plus, Jackson was tied for third in the nation at 40%. So third and long situations, third and medium long situations, 40% of plays, he got a first down. When you looked at red zone efficiency, he's, you know, Louisville scored on 30% of their drives. That was good for fifth. Baker Mayfield's numbers were absurd. I mean, absurd. 41.4% of drives ending in touchdowns. That's unheard of. Some guy named Matt Linehan from Idaho was second. But the big name right in front of Lamar was Sam Darnold. But when you go back to those other stats, third down conversions, the top name in college football was Mason Rudolph. Mason Rudolph was the top guy in third down conversions. So when you look at, and Rudolph's numbers were staggering in some of these things.
Let's look at just the sheer numbers, like the regular numbers. His senior season. So he's a senior quarterback. So he's experienced. He's mature. He was a 3-year starter. His final season, 65% completion percentage, over 4,900 yards, 37 touchdown passes, 9 interceptions. His touchdown pass increased every year from his freshman. Let's get the freshman. He had 6-4. It went from 21 to 28 to 37. Passing yards from 3,700 to over 4,000 to over 4,900. Those are staggering numbers. Now, the Big 12 gives a bad rap to quarterbacks because they play against bad defenses, but he also put up big numbers against good teams.
He did, and he's a very productive quarterback. My concern with Mason Rudolph has always been that he's closer to Baker Mayfield than he is Josh Allen. And what I mean by that is, despite being 6'5 and 220, 230 pounds, he plays more like a small guy with a smaller arm. And when you look at that, you can see that on the film. A lot of these deep balls that he's throwing up are more 50-50 balls that a guy like James Washington or Marcel Aitman, their talented wide receiver duo, are making plays on. So when I watch Mason Rudolph, that was always my concern and why he was being touted. And I always jokingly called him Mike Glennon, but that was always the thing with Mike Glennon. Don't you remember Mike Glennon coming out? It was, oh, Mike Glennon has such a big arm. He throws such a wonderful deep ball. And then he gets to the NFL and it's like, man, his arm's really not that good. That's why he struggles to, you know, have a great completion percentage, is because those throws that he was making in college aren't there anymore. Well, it's similar to Mason Rudolph. However, he's a little more athletic than Mike Glennon. He's a guy that can throw off multiple platforms. He's a guy, you know, that's a buzzword that you'll hear. But what that means is he's a guy that depending, he can move his feet in the pocket, reset himself and throw, but he can also move his feet in the pocket and still deliver a good ball. He's a guy that doesn't have to be necessarily in protection. You know, he's not a Blaine Gabbert type where you get a little heat around his feet and he's going to be throwing the ball to the other team or into the dirt. So he can move around and make throws. He's a guy that understands offenses he plays in. You brought it up. He's a senior. He is read into that Oklahoma State spread offense. He is a guy that he knows when he walks up to the line exactly what his offense needs to do to combat the defense that is lined up across from him. So this is a guy that when you look at it from that perspective, he is 100% a good quarterback, and he is 100% going to get a chance to start in the NFL. My issue has always been, is he a guy that is going to end up like Mike Glennon, where he's the starter that you have while you're looking for the eventual replacement? Or is he a guy that can kind of take the next step at that level and be, you know, Bradford is a very unique player because of his accuracy, but, you know, kind of be in the mold of a Sam Bradford, a guy that can make throws, but isn't necessarily a guy that's going to put up, you know, 35, 40 touchdowns a season, but he's a guy that's going to take care of the ball. We talked about interceptions with Lamar Jackson. He had 27 in his career. Mason Rudolph in four seasons, in 1,447 passing attempts, he had 26 interceptions.
That's great. That's good.
So he's a guy that when you're talking about accuracy and taking care of the ball, that's what he's going to do well. I don't know if he's ever going to be a guy that's going to lead an explosive, you know, high-powered, high-octane offense, but I think he could be a guy that is a high-level game manager, is a guy that can make throws when he needs to, but he can keep the chains moving, keep the team on time, and he can be a guy that you win with. Now, again, that's a really hard sell at 15, right? You're not saying, oh, this is going to be a guy that's going to be a MVP candidate. No, I'm not saying that. But, you know, if he's closer to like I'm trying to think of quarterbacks that he kind of reminds me of that are starters. It'll come to me. But when you look at
Is he Derek Carr-like?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't have the arm of Carr, but yeah, I mean, something like that. Where, but you know, Carr was almost a an MVP, what, 2 years ago? Mm-hmm. So when you look at him, let me – I just got to pull up. Names are – I'm just drawing a blank on names right now. It's the biggest issue. But, you know, like I said, like he can be like a Sam Bradford or Teddy Bridgewater. Like I know those aren't sexy names, but those are guys that are good NFL quarterbacks, right, when they're healthy.
Tannehill?
Yeah, Ryan – you know, he's not as – he's not as careless with the football as Tannehill is. He's very conservative in a good way. Like he takes care of the football. He knows his limitations. He's a guy that is going to complete a lot of passes, but they're going to be kind of safe passes. And that's not. And all of this starts to sound negative, and it's really not. I mean, he kind of reminds me of Nick Foles almost.
Okay.
Right. Like,
well,
like
high variant. The thing with Nick Foles, high variance to his game. That's the thing. Is that what you probably see out of Rudolph, a very high variance quarterback potentially?
Right. And that's what it will be. It'll be a guy that is going to be up and down. He's going to be a guy that is going to have really nice games when he's on a roll. But when teams kind of have time to look at him a second time, you know, maybe within the division, he might struggle a little bit, but yeah, I mean, he's not going to be a bad quarterback in this league. The question is going to be, is he going to be a starter that you can win with? And if he is, then at 15, that's not paying a high price at all. Right.
No, but not at all.
So and that's the thing. I don't think Rudolph is as good as you know, those other guys, but I don't think the distance in between is enough to literally trade away all of your day one and two picks in 2018 and most of your day one and two picks in 2019, because I don't think you're going to know for sure whether Rosen or Darnold are going to be guys that you can put in and win with right away. You know, I think from a talent perspective, Rosen is, but I just don't know if he's going to click and mesh with coaching staff, front office, like and the players in the locker room.
I think Rudolph has that makeup, and I've said it for the last couple of weeks. I've pegged him as the Cardinal, not because he's my favorite quarterback, but because I think he will be the quarterback. And I think for Rudolph, he's more likely I don't know if he'll make it all the way to 32. So he's kind of like in my third place scenario would be where they trade up to the out of the second round into the first to get him. I think their choice number one with Rudolph would be to trade back and get him. But I think I could see him being taken at 15. I can see that. And if I'm calling my shot right now, he's going to be, in my opinion, I think he will be the quarterback that the Cardinals get.
And here's one. And I, you know, like I said, I've been spacing these names. Here's one. And it kind of goes along the lines of Nick Foles a little bit, but he kind of reminds me of Jared Goff, right? Like,
yeah,
that spread quarterback. Arm's not exactly what you want, but he's a guy that can make the throws, and he's a smart guy. That's what I get from Mason Rudolph more than anything, is he's a guy that understands the offense he plays in and what the offense needs him to do for that offense to be successful. So, you know, that's what I like I said, I'm not a Rudolph fan by any means. I'm not going to say, oh yeah, draft him over Lamar Jackson or if Josh Rosen were to fall, but he is a good enough option that I wouldn't trade the world for another guy.
The other guy that we can look at now is Kyle Lauletta. Small school guy, big performance at the Senior Bowl. He's not this is going to be different with Lauletta because of the school setting and the fact that one thing about Lauletta we don't have, he doesn't really have any elite traits. If you look at the other quarterbacks, you've got some traits that you're like, wow, about it. Josh Allen, who's got the incredible arm. You've got Lamar Jackson with the incredible athleticism and running ability. Rosen with his ability to pick apart a defense. You know, Lauletta doesn't have any elite trait, but he kind of does everything well. Now, I don't think there's anyone. So he would be a guy that I would think they could maybe get him at 15 in round two, but possibly at the high end, they could trade up to and trade back into the first round to get him because of the comment that Kai made. He said it's advantageous to draft a quarterback in round one because of the contract situation.
Right. And when you look at Lauletta, there are things, like you said, that you absolutely love with him. One is that from the mental aspect of the game, it sounds like he's super bright and that he is a guy that understands the game of football.
He's played in almost every offense in his 4 years in Richmond.
He's a guy, when you look at his highlights, there's two things that really stand out about Lauletta over probably every other quarterback here. And that's how he throws with anticipation, but then also his release. He's got a really quick release. So everything's kind of short, compact, and he gets rid of it. There is one glaring concern when it comes to Lauletta, and it's something that you'll read in every single scouting report that you see on Lauletta, and that is you are genuinely concerned about his arm strength and whether or not he's a guy that can make consistent outside hash throws in the NFL. Not his deep ball arm strength. I mean, that's something, you know, you throw it up and let these guys run under it and catch. But is he a guy that is going to have the arm to put the ball
small windows on the outside quickly?
Right. And so when you look at it, the guy he kind of reminds me of from a throwing standpoint, he's not as athletic, so I don't want people to get this the wrong way, but from a throwing standpoint, it is kind of like Alex Smith. I don't know if his arm's quite as good as Smith, but he also plays similarly to Smith. And so for some people, that's something that they don't like, right? Because Smith is an uber conservative quarterback. But if you're the Cardinals and you're bringing in a Kyle Lauletta, going from Sam Bradford to Kyle Lauletta, I really don't think that that's a huge difference in skill and type of quarterback. Bradford's got an all-world arm. He's just very conservative with when he uses it. You know, he's kind of the anti-Carson Palmer. Palmer really believed he can make any throw at any time, and Bradford just makes the throws that he needs to make all the time. And so that's who Lauletta reminds me of. But he moves a little bit. He can move a little bit. He does have some athleticism. I think people forget how athletic Alex Smith was when he was coming out. Remember, he ran the Urban Meyer offense.
Yes.
at Utah. So it's not like he was a spread sense of spread throwing the ball. No, he was a running quarterback too. So that's the question again, though. And if you're talking about trading back into round, or trading either deep into round one, like a team like, I don't know, let's just throw a name out there in the picks, you know, like the Jacksonville Jaguars. And the Jaguars are going to give you their one and their two. So they're going to give you 27 or 8, whatever it is, and their second round pick. And I don't even know if they have a second round pick, so don't, you know, quote me on this. But you're probably not going to land Mason Rudolph. You're probably not going to land Lamar Jackson, but you really could land Kyle Lauletta. And while people will scoff at that because you'll go to the NFL draft scouting report on him, and I believe they have like a round 3-4 grade on him. Well, don't forget what they said about Marcus Golden, about David Johnson, about, you know, a lot of these guys. Don't worry about what the NFL.com report or whatever says on him. Think about it in this way. You have a fifth year option on a quarterback. You gained a second round pick, whether it you know, like I said, whether it's the Jaguars or somebody else, and all of a sudden you have five picks in the top 100. And something you and I have talked about ad nauseum on this podcast is the Cardinals have a lot of holes. And last time I looked, five is more than four.
And so, the round two and three talent is pretty solid in this class, right? At a lot of positions.
Right. Like the drop off. And here's the other thing. And I mean this wholeheartedly. The drop off from 15 to about 75 isn't going to be that vast. I mean, you're probably not going to get a cornerback one at 75, but you might not be able to get a cornerback one at 15 either. Like, that's the thing. So when you look at the draft in this sense, sometimes more is going to be better. And so, and will LaLetta move the needle in terms of name and everything? No, absolutely not. I mean, it's not going to excite fans in that way. But what you should be excited about is that this is a guy that has that Jimmy Garoppolo look to him. He has that, you know, Alex Smith kind of game to him. He's a guy that looks like he's going to come in and probably in 2019 or at the latest 2020 be an NFL starter, and a guy that hangs around for a long time as a good starting quarterback in the NFL. And probably is going to be a guy that's going to get a huge salary in 2023, and you're going to have all these articles written about him, about how it's a shame that he's the highest paid quarterback in the NFL because, you know, Aaron Rodgers is still playing and isn't the highest paid quarterback. But, you know, and I say that kind of tongue in cheek, but that's the kind of quarterback he is. People aren't going to appreciate him because he's not going to be, you know, the next Aaron Rodgers. But if he's the next Jimmy Garoppolo, who just got a huge contract and people were like, can't believe you paid Jimmy Garoppolo more than Aaron Rodgers, right? Is that really a bad thing for the Cardinals? No, that's actually a really good thing. If he's Kirk Cousins, is that a bad thing for the Cardinals? Well, considering the Cardinals just offered Kirk Cousins 5 years and $140 million and $90 million guaranteed, I would say no, it's not. So that's what you have to remember about LaLetta. He's not the name. He's not going to be the billboard guy. If you were to get a Darnold or an Allen, but in the end, he may be a better quarterback when it's all said and done.
Coming up next on the last part of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're going to talk about the other guys. Day three, some names you might want to know, some names that I'm not terribly familiar with. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Before we come back to the show, I'd like to remind you of always is of over friends over at harrys.com, where you can get a great shave at a great price. I've talked to you about the switch that I made from the electric shave, electric razor, the cheap razors to Harry's blades. Gives me a great close shave. The foaming shave gel is great. And the deal that we still have on the table for you guys, our listeners, if you go to harrys.com/CRED, you can get their trial set for just the cost of shipping. It's $3. You get the foaming shave gel. You get the ergonomic handle. You get the 5-blade razor head with this. You can get the great shave and get that for $3. It's a $13 value. And if you love it, continue with it, and replacement blades are only $2 a head, which is a fantastic price. You won't regret it. It's to get the quality that you get of the expensive stuff and the price of a cheaper blade. So join me and 3 million other men who've made this switch, harrys.com/CRED, and get that trial set for the cost of shipping, just $3. Again, that's harrys.com/CRED. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, and now the day three quarterbacks. Is there anyone worth mentioning? There's one name I'm sort of familiar with that I read into. That would be Mike White, the former baseball player who's got an arm, but a lot of question marks after that.
You know, White's a guy that he's going to intrigue teams with his size and arm strength, like you said. 6'4", 225. He's a guy that put up huge, huge numbers in the Western Kentucky offense, because everybody puts up huge, huge numbers in the Western Kentucky offense. But when you look at White, the question is always with athleticism. Can he be a guy that gets around and moved? And I've seen some comps to Zach Mettenberger.
Didn't you love Zach Mettenberger coming out of college?
No, I couldn't stand Mettenberger.
Well, that's right. There was, but yes, and then stuff came out, but he was a guy that a lot of people loved.
Yeah, and so that would be kind of my biggest thing is he was part of a team that took 46 sacks, 46. But when you look at just like arm, holy cow, this guy, I mean, he is fun to watch throw the football around. And that's a guy that, a lot of teams and a lot of coaches get enamored with because they feel like they can be the one that gets this guy to where he needs to be. We all know Luke Falk. I'm assuming most of the people listening live in Arizona and are familiar with Luke Falk. He's going to be a guy that is going to go late day three, early day four. He's going to be that prototypical, like, is he, isn't he? He is a guy that you have to worry about two things. One, is he healthy? He literally got sacked 125 times while he was at Washington State. I mean, just astounding. But the other thing is he feels like a rhythm passer. He feels like a rhythm thrower. Like he has to be in it early or it's not going to be pretty. Those are question marks. I don't think anybody really wants to touch, but you never know. Their names to know. Another guy I am intrigued by because he showed up on a lot of Justin's stats that I was talking about earlier is Riley Ferguson out of Memphis. But we all know the offense that he comes out of. What was the ASU guy's name? I can't even remember now. The old ASU OC that's now the head coach at Memphis.
Noel Mazzone.
Yeah, so
swing pass.
So his completion percentage, 68%, is ridiculous, right? But he throws a lot of touchdowns. He actually does have an okay arm, but he is really thin, like wispy. I mean, he's 6'4", but he's 210. Like he's a rail thin type of guy. He kind of slings the ball more than throws it. He's intriguing, but I don't know if you want to go that route. Another guy that has kind of gotten kicked around in terms of intrigue is the kid out of Marshall, Chase Litton. You want to talk about big? 6'6", 232. So he was a guy that when you look at size and kind of build, he's the one that makes that kind of checks all those boxes, but he is a lumbering mess of an athlete. He really doesn't move all that well. He didn't run bad. He had a 4.940, but his vertical jump was like 29 and a half inches. So he's just not a great athlete. Big arm, pocket passer. He's like a late day three type. There's other guys on here, but I just don't know. The problem we're in right now is I don't know what they're looking for in a quarterback. And when you look at it from that sense, you've got a guy like Mason Rudolph, who we talked about, who's kind of a caretaker of a ball, but has the ability to make some throws. Well, when you look at guys like Litton and Riley Ferguson, they're guys that don't have the pedigree and nor the athletic ability. And so you're going kind of downhill pretty quick. But when you look at this draft for the Cardinals, and this is kind of what, how we started the show. When you look at this draft for the Cardinals, the reason it's so important is because we talked about those top four, and it's very unlikely they're going to have a chance to get any of them unless they make a huge move up. But then you're talking about three other quarterbacks in Lamar Jackson, Mason Rudolph, and Kyle LaLetta, who all could make sense for the Arizona Cardinals, whether it be at 15, trading back slightly for a Jackson or Rudolph, or trading way back in round one at the end of round one, and then maybe, you know, quote unquote, reaching on a guy like LaLetta. And so when you look at all of that in that scope, it's going to be important for the Cardinals to come out with a quarterback this year, because it's rare that you're going to be picking 15 and have a chance at a Lamar Jackson. It's rare that when you're picking 15 that you could trade back and potentially get a Mason Rudolph. It's rare that when you're picking 47 that you could potentially end up with a Kyle LaLetta. So when you look at that, that's why Jess and I start off the show. It'll be very disappointing if pick 97 rolls around and the Cardinals have not drafted a quarterback.
And then they pick Mike White. And you're like, no, no, no.
You know, and it's not that you and I are against Mike White, but when you talk about guys that have failed in the NFL, the Mike Whites have really failed.
Yep.
Right? The
Ryan
the
Lindley, guys that, Logan Thomas, exactly. John Skelton. Yeah.
Those big arm guys that have, you know, that haven't ever put it together. So, yeah, when you look at it, you have to hope that the Cardinals are cautious to a sense, but they're also aggressive, and that they're willing to make a play for a player of the talent if Josh Rosen becomes available, or that they're willing to take a risk on a Lamar Jackson or a Mason Rudolph or a LaLetta maybe earlier than they're projected to go, because let's be honest, it fits the biggest need in the Cardinals organization, and they're guys that look like they have the ability to be not just solid, but long-term above average starters in the NFL.
And that's a wrap on this show. We've talked quarterbacks. It's been a long show. Hope you enjoyed it. If you haven't yet, make sure you head over to Apple Podcasts, subscribe to the show so that you already have it delivered right to your device. Give us a 5-star rating. We wouldn't mind that at all. We'd love that. In fact, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, iTunes, I guess Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify. You can even find us on RevengeOfTheBirds.com, on CogsWire.com, on Audioboom, on Blog Talk Radio. You can find us all over the place. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back talking draft next week, focusing on the rest of the offense. That's not the quarterback position. The Cardinals like to say, rise up, Red Sea. We'll tell you guys to rise up and see red.